welcome to Elephate in the Room, Elephate's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Derek Caraview, and with me, as always, is Christian A. Dumay. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
And this was the first podcast in the last couple that you actually stuck around through the whole thing. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm happy about this.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely picked a good one here. So though Marty Weintraub has had a lot of lives, today he's known as an entrepreneur, author, and speaker. He founded AimClear, a marketing agency dominant in psychographic targeting, which has won 10 U.S. search awards. Marty has appeared in front of hundreds of international search and social marketing conference audiences. We had a crazy little interview here. He had us laughing pretty much through the whole thing, and that wasn't even just at his picture with his 80s hair. I mean, this was some good stuff. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Marty Weintraub. Marty, welcome to the podcast. We appreciate you you joining us. And before we kick things off, could you explain to our audience who you are and what you do?
I was hoping that you would be able to do that for me. who am I and what do I do? Okay, so my job title is creative director and founder. I founded AimClear. We're an American agency. We won Best Large Integrated Agency at the U.S. Search Awards the last 2 years straight. And we have 10 U.S. Search Awards, including Search Personality of the Year, all integrated awards. I would describe myself as an entrepreneur because everything is about business. Well, not everything, but everything about business is about business. An author. I speak a lot at conferences and training clients, and I guide trips in the Canadian wilderness along the Minnesota border. My company is AimClear. We're pretty driven, and we were foundational in use of psychographic targeting, hacking Facebook ads the day after Facebook released the ads platform in November of 2007. We were already selling shit immediately. What makes us different is that 360 degrees, we can build out the creative for a brand, like the things that you say, your positioning statements, your branding in a 1960s Madison Avenue, New York kind of way, Mad Men. And that all hangs off of a very good performance search and integrated psychographics performance marketing team. We have amazing, incredible clients. Amazing, incredible clients from iconic brands to scrappy startups to just amazing shit. And we've worked for, like, we took Martha Stewart to Facebook ads in 2008 and did early work with some huge companies like Siemens and Macy's and train companies like Amazon and Travelocity. We helped with the rise to prominence in paid social of Airbnb, and Uber is a current client. My joy is getting to speak all over the world, like hundreds of times, like been to Sydney, Australia 11 times, Jerusalem twice, and my whole life is always traveling, lots in Europe. I write a weekly column in Inc. magazine, INC magazine. AimClear was the fastest growing private company in America on the Inc. 5000 list for 6 years in a row. It's been just like really super. And I've gotten to be a top 25 most influential PPC expert 5 times. My favorite part of my professional life is that I get to judge the EU and UK search awards. And so I have the joy, the pleasure, the privilege of really understanding who marketers are like in Europe and exactly what they do and who's awesome. So that's my story. Super proud of our scrappy company, and I have the most cool life. I just have such a wonderful life.
It sounds like it. We appreciate you taking a few moments from that life to spend with us. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started with our icebreakers. If there's anything you don't want to answer, feel free to just say Skip.
But my name's not Skip. Just go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind. If we collected all your emails and ran it through a program, what would be the most popular word you use?
Yep. Y-E-P. Fab. F-A-B. Fabulous. Well, actually, technically speaking, like I've done this, I've done phrase density analysis on my shit. When we founded AIM Clear, which was me, I ran phrase density analysis on popular blogs of the day, Rand, others, and then figured out that the companies, even if they were super small, if they went me, my, that's not what they're doing. Me, my, mine. It's we, us, ours, like that. So anyway, the most common words would be we, ours. And the least words would be me, mine, I. And then the adjective, the declaratives I like are yep, Y-E-P, fab, and the F word.
All right. The zombie apocalypse is coming. Who are three people you want on your team?
Three people I want on my team? Mm-hmm. Three. Okay. That's an amazingly cool question. Who are the three people I want on my zombie team? I want AIM Clear's CEO, Laura W., on the team because she's really super badass, really cool. Mm-hmm. I want a CEO. And Laura's a money person, like very high. I want a highly skilled business person. I want a PR professional with 30 years of experience. And I think in the political world, I think in the American political world, I would want Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden on my side.
I bet that guy could kill a zombie or two. I would believe it.
Yeah, like, dude. So I want one really old, savvy politician close to the middle. Yeah. I want one badass business executive who's good with money. And I want a PR guy. I want a 30-year PR guy with a broadcast journalism background. PR, money. Okay. Now that we have our priorities established for the zombie apocalypse team.
If you could bring back any fashion trend, what would it be?
I'm not knee-jerking. I'm not doing this lightning-ish because these are really crucial questions for the day. Fashion trends, what would I do? And I'm bringing it back. So I would make it so that the 60s mentality where you could be a man and like paint your nails or whatever doesn't mean that you're making a statement about your sexuality. Like I paint my nails. Mm-hmm. Like once I did it for a photo shoot, like for a magazine, and it was really cool. I painted them like AIM Clear blue. And then for like the next 3 weeks, my mom or dad never really taught me about that. Like I didn't. And so like for the next like week when I was in the shower, like the blue in my toes caught my eye and it delighted me. And I'm almost at a place where that's my big, bold cross-gender thing, is that I would go out in public like with my nails slightly blue and sandals or something. And I wish there was I'd like to see the summer of love mentality come back in fashion at the same time as we do of prudence of 2018 in this world as a metaphor for acceptance and love and stuff. That's not really that radical a statement. Like, why would I feel weird about that? Anyway, so the fashion statement I'd like to come back is I'd like to see fashion and openness from the summer of love with the responsibility that's required of us here in 2018.
Okay. Christian, you were known to paint your toenails on occasion, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I liked it.
It's pretty cool. That would be an amazing thing to have. So let's get really granular and set a KPI for this. We're marketers. Like it would be, because remember that between the three of us, we have the power to help bring things back because we're marketers and we're marketing strong for good reasons. So Like, I think it would be pretty cool to cause an insider revolution where lots and lots of people posted pictures of their beautiful nails who were men and wore them proudly in public, and it wasn't a metaphor for your sexuality.
All right. So my brother-in-law regularly paints his toenails. He'll go get a pedicure, and you know, he's got three daughters, and I think it started with his oldest wanted to paint his nails, and he liked it. And he's a big.
That's so fun.
Yeah. He's like a 6'4" guy. He used to be a cop, and every once in a while, he just walks around with red toenails. It's great.
To belabor it and say one extra thing that probably isn't required in the interview, my kids are 25 and 23, and they're both daughters, and I only recently got the first daddy-daughter mani-pedi with my 23-year-old in Dallas, and it was like my 23-year-old daughter in Dallas had never had a pedicure, and as her, like, mature father, I took my kid to, like, I took my daughter to get her first pedicure after I had been doing it for 3 years. And that was one of the coolest things ever.
What is your guilty pleasure?
There's so many of them. What is my guilty pleasure? My guilty pleasure is European taking pictures in Europe, where it's timed shutter speed, where I'll blur a subway train out across a 7-second exposure by putting extremely dark glass. And I study with some really amazing photographers and working hard on it. And so my guilty pleasure is where I spend 4 hours just shooting one thing. Like I'm in this place, there's three different things that I can shoot here, or ways to approach it. And I'm going to set up like two cameras right now on tripods with great gear. And I'm going to spend 4 hours and I'm going to get that. So just long amounts of time go, because photography is one of the most mindful things ever. Like when you do that, when it's like 38-second exposure and you're sitting there waiting for it to come up, mm-hmm. like it's the single most mindful thing I ever do. And it's hard to find 2 days to shoot pictures in Cologne, Germany. Like that's that's 2 days. Like, so that's my biggest guilty pleasure right now.
Okay. You can go back in time and be the official photographer for one event. What do you choose?
That's easy. Did you ever hear of Studio 54 in Manhattan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'd like to be the house photographer for Studio 54. Because if you go much farther back than that, you're into Ansel Adams shit and black and white and cubic looking things. And I like color and I like music and I like hyperbole and I like sex. And that's Studio 54. Like the second year it was open, Studio 54. There's a great XM channel. There's a Studio 54 channel. And one thing, the music all kind of sucks. Like, I mean, some of it is pretty cool. I mean, there's some Chaka Khan shit from that era, but most of it was just kind of stupid in a real grab someone's ponytail and leave sort of way. I was talking about my ponytail, by the way.
We saw the pictures. Yeah. Why are dried grapes called raisins, but other dried fruits are just dried whatever?
That's so funny because there is no gravity. The earth sucks.
And our final icebreaker question, if you weren't doing what you do, what would you be doing?
There'd be a few things that I would really enjoy doing. During summers, I'd be a professional guide on Lake Saginaw at the end of the Gunflint Trail in the Boundary Waters in Minnesota, taking people for like $600 a day to fish or take pictures. I would do something with photography. Mm-hmm. Everybody and their ass is a photographer because you can get such amazing equipment so inexpensive. And I do believe that good creativity bubbles to the surface no matter the competition. Mm-hmm. So it might be there. I would enjoy being a consultant to other people who are making businesses. Once you make the Inc. 5000 list like six times in a row, then at very least you're good at holding the airplane together with spit and bubblegum and some duct tape, maybe some aluminum foil and rubber bands. Also, I would completely enjoy retiring. I'd also make records. I would record music more. I have the ultimate piano that I played piano. I had a 25-year career as a musician, and I have the ultimate piano and the ultimate recording studio that any musician could ever want. Like, I'm in our Duluth office. There's a 1924 9-foot Baldwin concert grand piano that's been immaculately restored, not just to condition, but near perfection. And those eras of pianos had just a lot more wood in them, had a lot more wood in them. So they sound amazing. So anyway, the answer is I wouldn't do, there's multiple areas in my life where, that's actually the key we've learned for happiness is seeking mastery in a discipline that is not your job. For me to work as I invest a lot in my photography and so far as wilderness, like I just have the most amazing setup for it. So I try to do everything in my life, like imagining the flourish at the end. When I write a Word document, I hear the symphony at the end. Like, so it would be so easy. For me, it's more about making intentional decisions not to focus on things for balance, even though I love a number of things enough for it to fill my whole life.
Marty, I was at Ungagged London, and I saw you present. I'm not going to pretend that I understood the topic. And I remember you asking the audience at the end, like, who understood everything? And I think it was like 25% of the room.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
But I guess what I did understand, my takeaway from your talk, was that if I understood everything, I would be extremely angry.
That's really insightful. Yeah.
I mean, because you're talking about data and you talk about how America is a toxic dump. And I just felt that it was just, you know, when you talk about psychographic targeting and data mining and everything, I don't think the average person understands what's happening.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out the exact word I use. It wasn't toxic dunk, but it was really, really good like that. Just want to see if I can find that exact presentation. And depends. I believe I showed a picture of Trixie Nixie with in his mouth and a lima's ass. That's what I showed. I believe that's what I showed. I might have used the word cesspool instead.
Maybe. Yeah.
Anyhow, I talked about a number of things at Ungag. The first was that there's a major tech regression right now, mostly caused by GDPR in Europe and bad PR for channels in America as a result of Cambridge Analytica. And because of all that, then we're watching capabilities being stripped out of marketing tools right now, targeting. And so that's a very interesting thing. Most tech regression is caused by innovation, not by removing things that have become staples in any technology. I talked about what Facebook is good for and what it's not good for, and how we're using it. I think I referred to what's been happening with targeting as post-apocalyptic psychographics. And
right.
Okay, so first I'll speak to the swill pit part. America, you could do things in America that you just can't do anywhere or many places in the world. And Europe, as a collection of governments, has made a lot of behavior that marketers take for granted, like keeping track of data enough to run a retargeting ad or using Google Analytics. Because the rule is in Europe that you can't do anything detrimental to the site experience if you don't give me your data. And that's a freaking heave-ho laughable right there, because I mean, I think if Facebook only has session variables, they can't quite provide that experience, no matter WTF you order them to do. So GDPR is really quaint, and I think it's the right idea. And it's really, some of it's really cool, and some of it is really stupid. European marketers kind of don't know what they're doing with it as much as we do. It's interesting, and we're just planning on it in America. What's fascinating about that is that if you take a Facebook and there's, say, there's no targeting and it's just everybody in New York or everybody in Warsaw, and you just, everybody sees something that you do like 40 times and it has the name of your brand and has keywords embedded on a video unit that people sit and stare at for 20 seconds right, over and over and over and over again until people go to Google and search for it. Or whatever your local search engine is, that's kind of like how television worked in 1985, where you just went on three stations and every night on the news you bought 30-second commercials and you had metrics on how long people watched them, and it either worked or it didn't, depending. That's mass marketing, and it was always expensive. What's fascinating is that if you look at Facebook stripping targeting capabilities out, you can literally brand it very strongly with 2 cent euro video views until people start to search. And think about what organic brand search does for a marketing system. Think about what more inexpensive brand keyword search means to a marketing system. And fascinatingly, going top of funnel and branding shit is an amazing performance marketing hack. Here's the thing. America, it's very basic. In America, we could just build lists without permission. And you've been doing it in Europe, too. For most of the marketing history, you had to ask users in a culture permission to build a list. ICANN spam rules tightly regulate what you could do with email all over the world. But with when you're making a remarketing list and you're filtering it by a psychographic targeting attribute, you're building a list. And it's not a very big deal to associate the targeting stack concatenated for each step of what brought a user into the marketing system with their CRM record. So in America, we can I can bring them into the system with a keyword that I bought in Bing. I can retarget them, retaining that data in Facebook and filter it by something else. And when I send them back to the next landing page, I can take that concatenated profile. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they have the misfortune to give a marketer their email address or become a known customer or a lead, then that just goes into Marketo next to their name. Like, and you're just not allowed to do that in Europe anymore, and you won't be allowed to do it in America. And in America, we can still build lists for free. Oh, also, every kind of hyperbole is possible. It's pretty well possible to violate someone's human rights with a social channel by who you're targeting for what. Like, there's rules about not discriminating in most cultures, and that's not really the job. Like, of the problem isn't that this stuff is available to us. It's the problem that people misuse it. Mm-hmm. And I would point out that Cambridge Analytica exploited a loophole that was only open for a minute in 2014 that was closed right away, that no one could have anticipated, because they broke a contract and stole data. And if you look at any emergent technology, it's really hard for me to go, oh yeah, in next year, somebody's going to figure out that they can, and they're going to break the law in a contract and rip it off, and I won't even know about it. Like, so it's ridiculous to expect any platform to anticipate that and do anything other than cure it. Mm-hmm. And the reason all that stuff happened is because Cambridge Analytica was because they're scumbags. They were just willing to break the law. Anyhow, the bottom line is that in America, you could build lists without permission and retain the data at the user level as you discover who they are. And that's not politically correct anymore. However, I would say it does appear that the current administration that data safety for individuals doesn't seem to be something that is a great priority to this administration.
So what do you think going to happen next?
You know that scene in Star Wars where Luke just can't possibly fly that shit, so he puts blinders on and then goes down into that thing and then trusts the Force and fires the two shots that go in the exhaust pipe? Like, that's kind of what it's like. At AimClear, we've made analytics that are attributable that work in GDPR by a really cool kind of anonymization, and we don't need it. Because what's going to win again in marketing is people who know WTF to say to audiences at the overall level and vertically, that could actually line up the pure value of what they're selling and what people want or need. Mm-hmm. Even last year in the EU Search Awards, I saw lots of entries that spent way more money top of funnel than bottom or in the performance marketing stack. You'll see a resurge. That's one of the reasons that Elephate, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Elephate?
Yes.
Elephate is one of the best content marketing companies in the world. I know that from seeing it. I know that from knowing Bartosz. I'm happy to say it because I know it's true. By the way, as a judge, that doesn't mean I would always vote for that shit. I just know that the work is, I'm just saying the work is great.
Right.
There's other great content marketing firms in Europe. Kevin Gibbons and Blue Glass is very good. Lisa, who just sold her agency. What's Lisa's? What? Help me with that. Lisa Myers. Anyway. So there's a resurgence. You can cut that all of that out of there if you want. But if you cut it all out, then take out the Elephate part too.
Fair enough.
So the answer to your question is the reason those agencies are surging, Matt Sidla and Avalanche in America, others. The reason those agencies are surging is because if you make your job slinging AdWords and running that machine or doing Facebook targeting, and that's your job and operator, and that's how you earn your living, unless you work for like a very large company, that's not a growth position right now. What's a growth position is people that know what to do, what to say, marketers. The real marketers are going to not even care. Dude, most of my career, I couldn't build lists without permission. And here, this is really interesting. If you get consent, the right kind of consents and all the different ways that you're supposed to ask, then you could do anything. So it's about consent marketing. We have clients that have raised the level of consent they now receive versus 4 from like low double digits to like mid double digits. And we've seen case studies. As marketers, we're just going to be operating on smaller groups of people who are more committed because they said yes. That's the main. You could sum it all up right there. And then think about data retention and tools as how you serve people. Like, if you want to see my shit in your feed in Facebook, then you have to give me permission to use the data. Like, that doesn't degrade the site experience. It's whether find valuable ways to empower audiences with how you offer them things that aren't about the site experience. Mm-hmm. If they let you use their data, like obviously, if you want me to send you some in the mail, right?
Right.
You have to give me your data. You just have to. And obviously that does not denigrate the site experience. And if I'm willing, and also here's another one too. Take money out of marketing budget and put it into giveaways. Like when I was a kid and my mom took me to get my first bank account, they gave me a toaster, mm-hmm. a red one that I gave to my mom and my dad. And my question is, who do you think paid for the toaster at the bank? Do you think that the banking department paid for the toaster, or do you think the marketing department paid for the toaster? the marketing department. And the marketing department didn't have that $50,000 to put in the newspaper that week. But who cares? The conversion was way higher. So I think you're going to see people pulling money out of marketing and spending it on teaser projects. I'm going to give my best company, I'm going to give my very best customers four of these incredibly valuable things to give to a qualified friend. And what's the difference between that and media spend in the conversion stack, guys? Like, maybe it's more effective. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe people take the free shit and don't move to the next level. Uh-huh. Maybe they buy a house or a car, or you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think clever. We're done being this just signals the death knell of the digital marketing generation. Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube and Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram and Baidu and Yandex and the Microsoft universe, those are not strategies. Those are printing presses. Like, we're going to tell all the people that are blah, blah, that this thing makes their life blah, blah. And if they don't do it, then blah, blah is going to break and fall off or some part of that, or So the great marketers, I'm laughing. I think I just thought we just got to build lists without permission for like 8 years and we could still do it. All we got to do is get their consent. Like, if you can't get somebody to ask you to sell them your shit, you're not much of a marketer. No, no, no.
We're going to move on to the next part here. We're going to play a quick game of Would You Rather.
I think I love your podcast the most. This is so fun. I have no idea what that means. We're going to play a game of Would You Matter? Okay.
Would you rather?
Would you rather? Okay, good. That's better. Would you rather?
Okay. Less existential, I think.
Thank God.
Would you rather?
Oh my God, that's so funny.
How about would you rather lose the ability to hear or talk?
Talk.
All right.
Talk.
Would you rather have skin that changes color based on your emotions or tattoos that appear all over your body depicting what you did yesterday?
You guys are demented. That's so funny. Okay, do I want tattoos all over my body that chronicle what I did yesterday or skin that changes color with my emotions? Well, since when I was young, I did LSD a few times. I know with certainty you can taste your feelings or hear colors. So I'm going to go with the shape-shifting color skin.
Would you rather eat a box of dry spaghetti noodles or a cup of uncooked rice?
I'm not going to do either of them just because you tell me I have to. So the answer is I'm not going to eat uncooked rice. People go, hey, Marty, your choice is to blah, 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 blah. I go, why? Because you told me to? No, because I'm not codependent. I'm not. Like, I'm just not. And don't be codependent with me. Don't be codependent with me. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. I apologize. Would you rather have a 1 minute conversation with your past self or with your future self?
Well, I've had a lot of conversations with my past self and I'm done with that. And so I think it would be my future self.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'd go that way as well. Find out what that guy's up to. Would you rather have a flying carpet or a car that can drive underwater?
Well, I don't see how a person could live without either. And since I'm all about water, I think that I'd probably rather drive underwater than have a flying carpet.
And our last question here for the would you rather be responsible for the best marketing campaign for a terrible product or the worst marketing campaign for a great product?
Would I rather be known for a bad marketing campaign for a great product or a great one for a bad product?
Yes.
I'd rather do a great one for a bad product. Because you know what? Even guilty people are entitled to attorneys, and attorneys always get paid. And plus, I just can't get behind doing something that sucks. Like one plus, but I wouldn't do something for an illegal product, or I wouldn't take a job selling tobacco to people who are just of the right age. Mm-hmm. And I've been hired to do things, that pieces of music and video editing that got used as propaganda and for a political party that really I didn't believe with. All of earning money with marketing is the seduction and the versus how responsible mm-hmm. you are. So as long as it was not unethical, illegal, hurt people or something like that, then that's just fine. Lawyers always get paid, and good marketers always get paid too.
Well, last year in an interview, you described marketing as being about feeding the machine and not creativity. I think you even mentioned a little bit of that earlier.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. Do you still feel this way, or is it getting worse?
My thinking about it has evolved, and it would be, in my opinion, it's getting better. We just went through a generation of AdWords that lasted for years until the expanded ads came, where all you had was 25 characters, and to achieve your quality score, you had to use your literal keyword prominently in it, to where you'd search for something and there were a lot of ads on the page, and just straight down the page, it was the same dynamic insertion thing or fallback for it. And so to run AdWords for many years, like, you just really didn't have to know what to say. And so there wasn't an emphasis on that, at the same time as there is a huge influx of new professionals and mature professionals flocking from other careers. And so there is pretty much a generation of creativity that was raised on brain dead. And now with expanded ads and enhanced quality score measuring by channels, I want it more like, now if you search for something and look down Google SERPs, there's quite a lot of variety, and there's still a lot of sameness too. It's clear that this generation of AdWords people were not raised on copywriting. This much is clear. They were raised on MarTech. And so now we believe that creativity bubbles to the top, and if what you say about your brand is it's super, it's great, and it's innovate, like, nobody knows what the hell that means. Like, I want to know that it's a this and it does that. So old values of how we explain what it is, or what happens to you if you don't do it, or just does the brand. And marketing is about people seeing things over and over and over, where you're just trying to say the brand name and one short sentence, like a tweet long. Mm-hmm. The question was, as I said, that marketers, they're feeding the machine. The machine doesn't need us now as much as it did before. And some jobs operating AdWords and Facebook advertising, there's a deflation and people are getting paid less to do it. And I saw an ad in Europe from a top line search agency hiring an SEO associate for 25,000 euros, 25,000 euros a year, and a good health scheme, because that's how you say it in like Scotland, a good health scheme. And in US dollars, what's that? Like 30 something US dollars. Mm-hmm. If you had someone who could do that job, like a few years ago, then that paid a lot, like in America, like someone who was coming through university and had an interest in that and had done it on their own, maybe with some websites and like, you know, the type of like that job paid more than that a lot. Like that's frightening to me. So feeding the machine, I think that no, we're still feeding the machine, and the machine doesn't need us. Here's a place to feed the machine. there's Facebook ads where you drop in several headlines, several videos, several updates, several link text, and then it just rotates them. Mm-hmm. There's tools like that in Google too. That modular creative where the focus is on snippets is the way we've been doing it at AimClear for like 7 years. And it's something that Mary Moruta and I have been doing together like forever. Crazy stuff. The way we've always thought about dynamic rotation of focused text snippets is how the internet turned out to be. And if you're at the place where you're feeding the machine with creative, that's an amazing place to be. If you're feeding the machine by running Google, that's not an upwardly mobile profession.
You are doing a lot of traveling, a lot of public speaking, and you're also a big part of your company. I'm just curious, how exactly do you manage your time, and what's the secret of pulling off the work-life balance with that kind of schedule?
Thank you for that question. That is such a wonderful question. I have some really badass people on my team, and I submit to them. I don't do my own calendar. I'm in touch. The person at AimClear who is in charge of maintaining our library of contract snippets for the legal part, the MSA, and the what we're going to do part, the SOW, the scope, is a paralegal who worked with our CEO as a lawyer for 20 years while our CEO was a partner in a law firm. And I soon learned that this paralegal function was crucial to Laura's success. Because when we hired the other Laura in our company, she organized me like she would an attorney. And she I'd say a third of her schedule. And plus, she's seen so much legally that I trust her as a proxy in almost any business dealing that our company would do. She's very sophisticated. She's like a 25-year professional with paralegal skills. And oftentimes is the quality of helping us understand not just what legal implications might be, but from her non-lawyer chair, but also the social implications of how we might word something. And so the way I achieve work-life balance, like she also, I've had health issues over the years, and she might not know exactly what I'm doing, and she might. And when I'm sitting at Mayo Clinic, the call is to her, and we're flowing things. We're keeping them responsible. Also, we're really adept at project management software. We use Basecamp with some plugins, and it's highly effective, Basecamp 3. So it's a suite of tools, Google, Enterprise Google, Basecamp 3, and a person who spends something like a third to half of their schedule. And I would consider that Laura Pirtula manages me. I submit myself to powerful management. It's really cool. And each person at AimClear has some degree of helping to manage me. And in exchange, I work really hard to empower them with the mistakes that I've made, or what we know as a company. So it's letting someone else manage you where their job, and she'll go, well, I'm not going to put anything on this day because I know you're going to be with so-and-so in the Boundary Waters. And can you do a VoIP call at 1 PM? If it means that blah, like, and the people that manage me and do my schedule, they just really give a shit. Like, they just really care about me, and they've worked with us forever. And so I made a company that is my partner in that. It's really cool. I'm super lucky.
Yeah. Sounds it. Reading up on you, one of the things I kept noticing with your interviews is that you tend to drop words like Buddhist or the Buddhist kind of way. And even today you're talking about being mindful when you're taking photos. Huh. I'm just curious, do you subscribe to any of that? And are you applying that to your work?
Well, I'm sort of a Jubu, but I think Christ was cool, and Muhammad and Ismail were obviously badasses in a great way. Like, There's so much. There's so I do like some things about how Buddhists think about things, and definitely I've amalgamated that into high level category stuff for me. As a rule of operations, I work hard to be mindful. Like, I'm doing this podcast with you, and I do have a cup of coffee, and I am kind of rocking on my chair a little. But really, I'm not thinking about anything else except for being with you guys. Mm-hmm. That's one piece of mindfulness. And also, I pay attention to my interactions with other people and work hard at being effective with that, like interpersonal effectiveness. And I've learned a lot of techniques for that. Then I understand that whether it's in your personal life or in your professional life or your love life or your kids or whatever, I've learned that difficult emotions are inevitable. And so I just try to make sure that the stuff that I feel matches what's actually going on, and to not overreact and like regulating. It's good that I have powerful feelings. I'm a creative person. So mm-hmm. And I need that to be my joy and not my detriment. And then finally, I know that every person loses it sometimes. Like, there's nobody listening to this podcast that has not lost it. And so it's just really essential to recognize that and not do damage to things. That's the skills that live in the distress tolerance bucket are like, stop. I work hard to be conscious, to be a life affirming force and not a life sucking force, and to validate people's perceptions. Of course you feel that way. Anybody would. So mindfulness, interpersonal effectiveness, emotional regulation, and distress tolerance. And in those buckets are like Buddhist compassion, where like that person that's really pissing you off really bad, think about what it's like to be that person. Like they're in such a difficult place with themselves that it's affecting me. So like, and Jesus said that's the whole turn the other cheek thing. Compassion. Like, compassion is a universal concept. I guess at this time in my life right now, I don't want to be mad. I just really don't. Like, I just really don't want to be mad.
It's always nice to be able to let that kind of stuff go. And we've seen that, you know, just looking, doing some research on you, we see that, you know, your career has been one about changing and evolving with time. I am curious, though, about the Marty Weintraub in the 1980s. When you're on your way to being a rock star, as we were doing the research,
so fun.
The picture of you with the hair was
so fun.
Not what I was expecting to see. So knowing what you know now, and I know you've already said that you would go into the future, but knowing what you know now, what would you say to yourself back then if you had the chance? Is there anything that you could help yourself do differently and maybe take that extra step and be the rock star?
You mean what advice would I give right now that might have tipped that part of my career like way far over the edge? Like to become a household name. Like,
right.
If I had been Robert Smith instead of Marty Weintraub, right?
Exactly.
I would say that until the internet, probably most of the great art or music or cultural stuff that was ever created, the greatest shit in the world, like a substantial percentage, nobody ever heard of. And the person died in some stage of obscurity for lack of distribution. And it's like first distribution in music was records, what printing shit on wax controlled by people that had the money to own the printing presses and could figure out the business model. I would tell me then just to do exactly, I think that I tried to do the right stuff. The main thing I would want somebody from that generation to know is that, here's what it is. The fact that you're not a total rock star may well not have to do with the ability you have to execute at that level. Because, you know, you guys do content. That's one of the things you do. And you know that you can sling something completely awesome out in the universe. And it could be awesome and it might not work. And it might be the news cycle. It might be somebody who's an one person who's an influencer didn't see it. Like, there in the world of creating art and content, there are often false negatives. It is often that stuff that's really cool doesn't work. And it could, it, and that could be for any reason, and any reason. But there are rarely false positives. There are rarely false positives. If you throw something out there, art, culture, content, anything, and people dig it, and it resonates in a crucible in a small space, you can almost always get more out of that. You can almost get more out of it. And so what I would tell the me at that time, what, fortunately, there was one time period where I sold a shitload of CDs that had dolphin sounds and music on it. So I got to experience mass distribution. And I also like played in stadiums and stuff as a sideman. And that was really cool. I didn't get to be like the massive rock star, but I did understand that that we easily could have been like, and like, so what I would tell me would be to, I would say you're 25 years old and you have like 50 to 60 years of life more. Continue to enjoy every part of it. Pursue your dream, but live in the real world. See, I knew most of these things. I looking back on it, I'm pretty happy with how that went. Like, because if it weren't for the unfulfilled part of that dream, I wouldn't have a 6-time Inc. 5000 company and get to work with such amazing colleagues and associates and have friends all over the place and travel. And so like, I think I kind of had it right. And I do wish I knew then what I know now, because I would be more responsible then. I would tell me, you know what I would tell me? I would tell me to quit smoking so much weed and drinking sangria. I'd go, Marty, it's not cool to get on the tour bus and do some uppers and smoke some pot and drink some sangria. I would say, don't trash any more hotel rooms. Don't do that. I would say, have more self-respect for how I interacted romantically. I would say, damn, you're a cute boy.
And it sounds like now you're a rock star in a different industry. So you got to carry some of that with you, which is nice. So we're going to move on now to the Elephate lightning round. So these are going to just be quick questions. If you don't want to answer, obviously you can pass. I am not the boss of you. All right. Now I saw on your Twitter, just to understand the context of this first question, that you are a captain. So what we need to know now is the captain in Tennille or Captain Beefheart?
Captain of a semi-autonomous fishing boat in the Canadian wilderness.
Muffin or donut?
Ain't seen nothing till you're down on a muffin, Aerosmith.
Muffin. Okay. Iced coffee or cold brew?
Iced coffee.
The Revolution or the New Power Generation?
Oh my God, that's like saying what kind of sex do you want? I guess that Revolution or New Power. I like the generation before. I like the Dirty Mind album. The best. Go listen to the Dirty Mind record, which is the third Prince album, and that's the one. If I had to pick between Revolution or New Power, I guess I'd have to go with New Power, because it was. A friend of mine engineered a lot of those records. Uh-huh, okay. A late friend of mine. And it's crazy ass slamming.
The Replacements or Soul Asylum?
Well, if there weren't the Replacements, there wouldn't be the Goo Goo Dolls or quite a bit of the Seattle melodic stuff that happened. And the Replacements are a tragic story. And Soul Asylum saw success. And when Soul Asylum once took off his pants at the Minnesota Yammy Music Awards. And my same friend who did the Power Generation records also engineered the Soul Asylum records. I'm going to say The Replacements because even though Soul Asylum is an amazing band, The Replacements invented something, and they're a tragic story. Like they're, and those records are so good, really. So, and that's no disrespect for us. You're asking great Minneapolis music scene questions.
The sounds of dolphins or the sounds of wolves?
Well, once when I was making one of the Dolphins records, just for the hell of it, I went in the bathtub and did a squishy thing under my arm and set up the mics and put it on the record just for the F of it. Because dolphins are really romantic and they're clicks and whistles. And I mean, it's not like they're aesthetically unbelievable. And people care about them more than wolves. I'm going to go with wolves because they're a lot more sonically pleasing. There's more of a range of obvious emotion. Dolphin communication happens in a tighter space with less dynamics in terms of sound diversity or volume or frequency. Wolves just like will peel your skin off if you hear it from a tent in the middle of the night.
Red grapes or green grapes?
Whichever ones are seedless, but I'll go with red. Red for $30, Bill.
You can get rid of one, Twitter or Facebook.
Could get rid of one, Twitter or Facebook. Well, I guess I would have to go. I would have to keep Facebook because no matter what you use, like I use my Facebook like LinkedIn. It's if I'm doing it on Facebook, it's either personal branding, or it's in private with like SEO Oktoberfest group or something, or my condominium association group. Facebook is the most robust personal communication tool ever created. And I would miss Twitter. What I don't like about Facebook is that any human socially would have the temptation to be one thing to one person and another to another person. Diagnose someone with some kind of disorder, and I don't like that system. And I don't do it myself. Like I either do it to all my friends or I do it to public. And what I like about Twitter is that everything is in completely in public. And but I'd have to pick Facebook because it's just so. I mean, Mashable has 7 million Facebook followers, and I often have personal posts amongst my couple thousand friends in Facebook that get a lot more engagement than the Mashable website because nobody gives a shit about the Mashable, not web, Mashable Facebook site, because nobody gives a shit and nobody sees anything anymore. I like Facebook for the power of my personal profile and my ability to advertise to others. Twitter doesn't give me that kind of power, so I'm just going to take the best tool for 30, Bob.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's the end of the lightning round, and that brings us more or less to the end of our interview here. Do you have any final thoughts or anything that you would like to promote? What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, thank you for that. Well, first, really kick-ass podcast, guys. That was so fun. Like, I would do that for fun. Like, I always think when I'm with my staff, oh, we should record it and use that part on a podcast. And that's really fun. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. And regards, you're welcome. Regards to Bartosz. So far as promoting, you can email me, marty@aimclear.com. marty@aimclear.com. You can read me on AimClear blog along with other fun writers for our company. And I write a column for Inc. magazine, inc.com Inc. magazine. I'm doing a full day workshop at PubCon with Susan Winograd in Vegas this year. And speaking in Munich at SEO Oktoberfest and Oklahoma City. And you can just And then friend me on Facebook. I use it to make friends with marketers, and friend me on LinkedIn. And I promise I will not spam you or try, but don't spam me. Don't friend me and try to sell me, or I'll post that, make fun of you.
All right, great. Well, thank you so very much for joining us today. That was a lot of fun. I don't know if I've laughed that hard yet during a podcast. So we appreciate it.
You guys, it's so fun to get to be with, it's so fun to make new friends where you guys are hilarious too, completely hilarious. So good luck and take care.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumais, music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at ElephateSEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us, and see you next time.